Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 524. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a whole heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
I had quite a weekend. It did not go my way, but it was still a fun weekend. Our good friend Jeremy Mays did not have he had a good and not so good weekend. He did get to attend Clash of Champions since it was in Charlotte. So we will not, we'll probably talk about it some just because, you know, it just happened. But we're going to be concentrating on Raw and SmackDown here, I guess, tonight. Because he went to Clash, and we'll talk about that tomorrow night, hopefully on 525 here. And, yeah, so we're thinking, you know, we always kind of, put our heads together and say topic of the week. And, Brock Lesnar is definitely, always a topic worth bringing up, when he shows up. It does make a great deal of sense, to move him over to SmackDown, considering he is now had two clean losses to Seth Rollins. You know, it's probably a good time to put him in another field to play. And putting him against Kofi Kingston is, you know, a very good way to do that.
Yeah, yes it is. It makes sense. Brock on SmackDown, they definitely seem, you know, seemingly at SummerSlam, kind of finished him on Raw. It's been speculated on for a while that, you know, that this move to Fox is very important to WWE, and it's also very important to the Fox Network, and Fox, having spent all those years in the UFC business, you know, sees Brock as, you know, the biggest star in WWE, as many other people would too. So it makes sense that they'd want him on SmackDown, and the move would be made. And since he's not, I still don't feel like he'd be appearing all that much more often. Although I don't know the particulars of his most recent and current deal. Putting him in a situation where he is challenging for the WWE Championship in his first match on SmackDown, on an episode of SmackDown, you know, pretty big deal there. It's, you know, 15, 16 years since the last time Brock and Santa has had an actual match on free TV. So, no, I mean, that's a pretty big deal there.
I definitely watch my fair share of NFL action, and I've watched a couple of games on Fox, you know, each week, and Fox is definitely advertising SmackDown Live to, I would say, an audience that tends to be able to get into wrestling. So kind of like you were saying, with Brock Lesnar being moved over to SmackDown, that's one of the things that popped into my head as soon as Lesnar popped up tonight.
Yeah, incredibly recognizable. It's something that you can absolutely push on an NFL game. It's, you know that to have this match, this huge match with this big star that, you know, everyone, you know, was one of those people, the vast majority of people, certainly most vast majority of people who are watching the NFL, who maybe are or were, or maybe were wrestling fans, or are or were UFC fans, you know, they absolutely know who Brock Lesnar is. So he's definitely that name.
Yeah,
to help sell that first episode, because they're looking for, I mean, they're looking to, you know, for a huge rating. Or at least get that first night off to a rocking start, and, you know, having Brock in a title match, it is a good way to do that. And, you know, as we said, obviously Brock is going to be on SmackDown going forward. So I highly doubt that, you know, in the draft the week later he's going to be moved back to Raw. I mean, now it makes sense because until that draft, the wild card rule is still in effect, so Brock can't. So it makes sense that Brock can just jump to SmackDown whenever he feels like, because, well, so does everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, there's no use in going over the fact that it's mentioned in name, but in true execution, it is not really there anymore.
No, there's no rhyme or reason to it. Yeah, it's whatever they want in that particular week. So yeah. I mean, conventional wisdom says that Brock is winning that title, and I have there's probably very little chance for a Kofi win unless they want to drag out some type of a chase. But I mean, it would be huge for Kofi on that night in front of that audience to beat Brock. Hell, even on a disqualification or a countout, that would be a big deal for Kofi if they are absolutely 100% in the Kofi Kingston business going forward on SmackDown. But I have my doubts.
I'm of your viewpoint. I just really think that, you know, for the reasons we just mentioned, you know, Lesnar's the most recognizable person that they have. And putting the title on him, it's kind of the easy play. And I'm not surprised that they're going with that.
No, not at all. And
you can't really blame him. I mean, Kofi has had a pretty decent run.
He's had a very good run. I mean, there's nothing to be ashamed about. It, you know, it certainly lasted through SummerSlam. He, you know, beat a bunch of people, including Randy Orton this past week, Clash of Champions, and then.
And that probably is the most recognizable thing. Like, he got a clean win over him.
Yes, he did. He got that old monkey off of his back from that story from 10 years ago. No. Kofi's had a very good run. I mean, nothing lasts forever. It's probably lasted longer than a lot of people thought it would. So, there's nothing to be ashamed about this run. I do wonder what would be next for Kofi. If he as a single is going to stay in the upper card, or if they're going to go back to the 3-man New Day team, any two of them can be in a tag match at any time and defend the titles or what have you. I mean, apart from, I would say they're not the tag team champions right now.
Yeah, it's too late to go back on this one, I think, as far as like kind of going to him being in the tag team in more of a full time capacity.
So I hope that he has, you know, established himself as someone who they can bring up and down, and, you know, put in the U.S. title position, and, you know,
still
be a pretty big deal. Maybe get a WWE championship again down the line, you know. But yeah, no, it feels like they're ready to run with Brock. I'd actually like to see if it's the end for Kofi. I wouldn't mind, you know, Big E stepping up to challenge Brock, you know, down the line. I think there's definitely a story they could do there, and there's definitely a strong potential for that match.
Yeah, I mean, people have long thought that Big E was going to be the singles guy because of his size and his athleticism, and I guess it's always been a little bit of a surprise that he hasn't really gotten anywhere as a singles wrestler to me at this juncture. Because he does seem to have everything, and the guy can talk too.
Yeah, you absolutely can. So yeah, no, I said that's something I would definitely, you know, like to see, you know. I mean, I don't foresee a huge singles run for Woods really ever, although stranger things have happened. But, Kofi and Big E both kind of floating in and out of the tag team to, of the regular tag, blowing out of the regular tag team to, you know, go for singles gold. I would absolutely see that, and I think it'd be really good. So yeah, no, I mean, it's just throwing out there because once again, I mean, you know, Brock's opponents on the babyface side on SmackDown are a question. I mean, without rushing back to him versus Roman Reigns in particular.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that they moved Reigns over to SmackDown. It's like, oh, good. We're not going to get Brock versus Reigns anytime soon, hopefully. And now it's like, oh, crap, that still might happen. Because I would think that, again, from a star power perspective, that they'd probably keep Roman Reigns on SmackDown, too.
I would not be surprised at all if they kept Roman Reigns on SmackDown. I mean the balance of talent between Raw and SmackDown and Fox and USA, it's going to be interesting to watch, especially, you know, obviously coming out of that draft in, you know, the second week of October. That's going to be very, very interesting. Fox is, you know, it's network TV, you know, Fox. I mean, I don't think the difference, there's that big of a difference in the money they're getting between one or the other. So it will be interesting to see, you know, who gets what stars. I mean, you give them Brock, you give them Roman. Yeah, that's two major talents just right there.
Oh, right. But you're giving them Steve Austin for his own show. And you're giving them the Miz and Mrs. Come on, what else can you want, Chris? Why would USA not be content with just that? Yeah, I mean, kind of the big names are kind of like, I mean, I would assume Charlotte's going to be staying on SmackDown too? Question mark.
Yeah, I assume Charlotte. I mean, Becky Lynch is all over the advertising for SmackDown, so and that's interesting because she still currently holds the Raw Women's Championship.
Oh, I hadn't paid attention to that for some reason or another. I suppose that's a possibility.
Yeah, you know? It's a very strong possibility. So yeah, maybe they do see more, you know, more potential with the Fox deal, and you know, for once in the East Raw SmackDown relationship, SmackDown is going to get the larger end of the stick more consistently.
Yeah, that would be pretty weird in the whole scheme of things. I always feel like, in general, over the years recording here for Stunt Granny, that SmackDown has been the better of the brands the majority of the time. After going, man, they really got raked over the coals when they changed rosters here. When
right.
You know, at least when they've kind of separated things in that manner.
And then there were the years where nothing was separated, and SmackDown was just a B-show wasteland for so long before they did the most recent brand split and the move to SmackDown Live, being a live show on Tuesday nights.
Oh. Yeah, I kind of take that for granted. It's going to be kind of nice to have SmackDown move back to Fridays. In my opinion, to break things up a little bit.
Yeah, it definitely will. I mean, the Monday, Wednesday, Friday for our wrestling shows, I think that will help with a lot of things with our non wrestling lives or social lives. What you know, other, you know, non wrestling television shows we like to watch. Yeah, that will help a lot.
Um, So yeah, I guess I've kind of forgotten that since SmackDown Live has been live for a few years now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been over 3 years now.
Yeah, I guess I kind of forgot that it wasn't live for really most of its existence.
Right, and now it's live, going to be live on Fridays, which as been noted, you know, just completely changes WWE's entire, you know, live event scheduling and their production schedule. But they're getting a shitload of money for it, so it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, they signed the deal. They evidently think it's worth it.
Yep. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, they're gunning for this time. You know, if you think the last few weeks have been kind of, more like just kind of fighting time, then at least we're finally starting to get into where things are going to get very, very interesting. As people said, in 2 weeks the wrestling business is getting its shot in the arm and kicking the ass that it hasn't had in a long time.
I mean, it's going to be pretty interesting at the old Stunt Granny HQ here. There is a lot of wrestling to be had, and I mean, we were already talking about doing another AIW show podcast and I'm trying to think of what they're calling their event this coming Friday.
Bobblehead Night featuring D'Lo Brown.
Oh, yeah, D'Lo. I mean, come on, who doesn't... Jeremy and I, back in our Kent State days, went to a signing with D'Lo Brown at a local comic book shop. And let's just say that neither of us want to show those pictures.
Oh,
and,
boy.
and I have both of them.
Well, we might have to share those in the body of our of the show post next week.
I might need to I'll need to take a picture of them, sans scanner. But D'Lo Brown was a favorite of Jeremy and I's way back in the day, so I'm game for a little more D'Lo Brown action.
He's a good guy for AIW and for any indie to book, and having him team with Big Twan, that should be fun.
Yeah, okay. So after that off-road, I guess we can kind of, I think we're done with the Brock Lesnar talk now.
I think so too, yeah.
Would the second biggest event of SmackDown be, would you say confirming of the... confirming that Rowan is indeed behind all of these attacks?
I think so. I mean, there's always the chance that we're doing like a kind of an old school, you know, long game, you know, con to lure in Roman Reigns so that Daniel Bryan can turn against him and beat him down 3-on-1. A la Flair and Sting and the Horsemen all those years ago. But barring that chance, it does look like it's going to be Harper and Rowan versus Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan and Hell in a Cell. Whether that stays a straight tag team match and Daniel Bryan and Sting babyface, I don't know.
It would be one of the crazier things. Because I'm like, when I saw that happen, I'm like, man, are they really turning him babyface? Because, I mean, he's just kind of ping-ponged a little bit here since, You know, he returns, things don't go quite as smooth as they want. He goes heel, everything is seems to be working out, but I don't know if they kind of want him as a babyface star again.
That's an interesting question, and I don't know exactly also where he's going to end up after the draft. If Raw is going to be the one more in need of stars, and particularly more in need of baby faces, maybe he's someone you go with over there, or you keep him on SmackDown. But yeah, no, it's this. I don't know if this was necessarily the plan all along to end up with Daniel Bryan as a babyface team with Roman Reigns against Rowan and a guy in Harper who they weren't sure what they were going to do with, seemingly for months and months.
I'm
fairly certain that
his letter was actually published online, was it not, or his request for resignation?
Absolutely. Oh, it exactly was. He was incredibly serious. Yeah,
so, I mean, that was one of the bigger shocks to me. It Clash of Champions. And, oh, man, I'm sure Jeremy was just completely pumped about that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he was. And you know what? Yeah, I mean, it was well done the way that they did it. There had been no speculation about Harper. In fact, almost hilariously, Dave Meltzer had been asked about on his show about the future of Luke Harper, and Dave, like that morning, Dave read an email question about the future of Luke Harper and said he doesn't believe that Luke Harper is ever going to wrestle in WWE again, and then he shows up that night. Yeah, so they kept that pretty well hidden. Whenever the decision was made to return Harper, whenever they worked things out, I definitely feel like the end game of this storyline has changed multiple times since it began.
Yeah, because I mean, they really could have played it as a real whodunit. Instead of doing the weird route that they ended up going.
Yeah, like, I think they were pretty... It did seem like they were pretty embarrassed by that whole finish of SmackDown with the Rowan lookalike and have not mentioned that again in weeks.
Yeah, it's probably for the best.
Again, as of now, you imagine the tag match is going to be one of the feature matches of Hell in a Cell. Maybe it'll be a third match in the Cell. Maybe it won't. And I guess you can definitely use the next 2 weeks to play up the whole "Can Roman Reigns trust Daniel Bryan" story going into it. And no. Once the match is in the ring and the bell rings, we'll see what Daniel Bryan's intentions truly are.
Well, not until the bell rings, because that's always the silliest part about professional wrestling is you've always got to wait until deep into the match to screw over your partner.
That is true. Or go the Dean Ambrose route and do it immediately after you won the tag team championships.
Well, yeah, there's that one too. Yeah, that's never made a whole lot of sense to me, but it is wrestling sense for whatever reason.
No, that was all very bad. I don't expect them to go that direction here or ever again.
Yeah, so I mean, I could see them stretching this storyline out a little bit longer, but I don't think that they're gonna, you know, do it for that much longer.
No.
You know,
I mean, it's definitely something to keep everyone busy. And once again, you know, once the draft happens, who knows where everyone's going to be anyway.
Oh, right.
And the draft is the week after Hell in a Cell. So this whole thing might be a one and done deal. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's I guess I'm all for them using more people. Like, I
And I'm
it's
all for Harper and Rowan's continuing it as a tag team.
oh, well,
They will never have faith, they will never have full faith in either of them as a single, so you might as well just keep them together. They got
yeah.
some.
And the tag team division can use them, especially if you're going to have Authors of Pain around on top of that.
Yeah, and the Viking Raiders and Heavy Machinery. There's some pretty hefty teams out there.
Yeah. So they'll fit right in, even if, yeah, you don't like either of them as singles wrestlers. It just, just go with the flow, man.
Yeah,
I don't know why you're trying
as long as
to.
the flow, as long as that flow leads to Roode and Ziggler losing those Raw tag belts quickly.
Oh, I got a feeling that one might be a little bit longer than you would like. Yeah, I mean, they are, for whatever reason, like, it's been really bizarre how behind but not behind Dolph Ziggler the WWE has been since he came back.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to justify his new contract by featuring him, but their heart's not totally in it either.
That's a perfect description. Like, because, I mean, he has chewed up a lot of scenery. A lot. And it just, none of it's led anywhere other than to just more time. And, he's getting spots with Shawn Michaels. Like, they at least clearly value him on some level, but it doesn't ever feel like full commitment. Like, it's kind of a weird situation. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess we've lost some tag teams recently. I feel like the Usos have been taken off TV for the most part too here recently. I feel like they made one or two appearances, but because neither.
They have not made any recent appearances since. Hold on.
Oh, okay.
Let me see which one was arrested most recently.
Oh, well, I mean, I feel like they kept on getting through all of those. Like, that was one of those things I'm like, come on, dog, that's like your third DUI. That's just not fucking cool, man. Like,
Okay, it was Jimmy. Maybe it's always been Jimmy who keeps getting these DUIs. So yeah. So
yeah,
yeah.
I think it is, and it's just like, man, no, just knock that shit off. Like, I mean, I know I did that, and it is not cool. And I would hope by his age it would have dawned on him that that is not cool, especially when it is fucking easier than ever to get a ride away from a bar.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely is. There's no call for it. There's no reason for it. I mean, they're obvious. I don't want to speculate on punishment or rehabilitation or anything that's been going on. That's the reason they've kept them on TV. But they've been off TV for the last couple of months. And,
Yeah. Hopefully things are getting better for him because yeah,
Yes.
when you're getting to multiples of that kind of a thing, like it's kind of a pattern and it's a problem. But yeah, I mean, the WWE needed some teams to fill in, you know, because I do remember Sheamus was on ENC, wasn't he, I believe? And I guess I didn't realize that, you know, he just isn't cleared to wrestle. It is, you know, what it's come down to. He didn't really say what the problem was to start with. You know, it does not seem like it's anything physical. You know, it makes me think that it's concussion related or, you know, impact related in some nature. You know, neck, I guess.
Yeah,
Would come to mind
I
for me.
I'm completely ignorant to not following through and listening to Sheamus on Edge and Christian show. But no, yeah, Sheamus has been off TV since WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, so the WWE's, they've just lost a lot of kind of tag teams recently, and they needed a few extras. You know, and I think Rude and Ziggler's just gonna, they're gonna be filling that hole. I don't think that they're gonna be long-term champions, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them keep it for a little bit longer.
Yeah, it's possible, but I do think that, you know, well, they've been seem to be pushing the Viking Raiders pretty hard the last few weeks. I could certainly see them being the next Raw Tag Team Champions, but then once again after the draft, who knows? So yeah, no, I don't see them being long term champions, but you know, possibly longer than Hell in a Cell at least.
Yeah. Boy, and I wasn't even gonna bother about them. I guess third order of business on SmackDown, to me, would be Kevin Owens saying that he was going to fire Shane McMahon.
That was interesting. You know, obviously they're going with the threat of legal action and, you know, $25 million, and Owens, you know, they all essentially threaten to legally take control. Although I'm not exactly sure how that would work. I assume we're gonna get a match out of this between either the SmackDown or SmackDown on Fox or Hell in a Cell with, you know, Owen's career and control and Shane's, you know, control on SmackDown up for grabs. And likely that will be where, you know, Shane, you know, loses and at least, you know, goes away for a while.
Oh,
because they really can't push ahead on in a new era. We've said it over and over again. They really cannot push ahead on a new era of SmackDown with Shane still around. It's just been too much of them.
Yeah, it's been a crazy run. Like, I know that we started to marvel at it a while ago, but yeah, he went from a traction match to full timer in no time flat here recently, and it's been wild. And yeah, we don't need it. They have enough other guys on the roster. Honestly, that they don't need him. You know, I still think a lot of times it's more on the WWE than on their talent for who's gotten over and who hasn't.
Right. No, I agree.
You know, it would help anyone if they got the TV exposure that Shane McMahon does, but yeah, they don't do it enough. Anywho, Yeah, I am hopeful that we will be seeing less of Shane McMahon in the near future.
Yeah, and what it also looks like the people who were reading into, you know, tweets and assuming that Kevin Owens was NXT bound, it seems like they're not going to be correct. Since he showed up tonight, then he's obviously the story is going to continue and lead to some sort of match. So, yeah, no. I
did not see those NXT bound rumors. I mean, he would certainly fit in with all the guys that they have down there currently. But, yeah, I think he's too big of a piece to move over there right now. In some ways.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, there was thoughts that, you know, he would, you know, go to NXT at least for a little while and just have a quick feud with Adam Cole over the NXT title, which maybe it'll still happen, but it looks like the storyline is going to move in that, you know, he's going to return, he's going to come back to SmackDown next week, and then he's going to, you know, then after that, it is the first Fox episode, and, you know, maybe they'll have the match there, or they'll have the match at Hell in a Cell with Shane, so it's, yeah, it's looking more like, you know, Kevin Owens is a kick-ass babyface. Would also be a fresh opponent for Brock.
Oh. Yeah, and he's definitely got the size, and, you know, at least some size on him to not. I people won't question his size against Brock as much as, you know, a majority of Brock's opponents recently. You know, from Finn to AJ to Seth have all been physically, inferior. I don't know. Inferior is a terrible word to use. But just not as big physically.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, you kind of had a David and Goliath situation going on. So that would be something fresh as far as, you know, Owens providing him a different type of opponent to be facing. And yeah, that'd be pretty awesome. I'd be all for some Kevin Owens, Brock Lesnar action. It's a fresh Brock Lesnar feud. And there are not a whole lot of those out there that I think that they can go with.
I totally agree. So yeah, no. You can hopefully move some new people into position against Brock if he's going to be, you know, the WWE champion on SmackDown, and but who still only wrestles occasionally. You know, you can move guys like Owens, Big E in there, maybe some others, and not have to retread too many matches.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of cool. You know, I mean, Brock, outside of that Dean Ambrose match, I don't feel like he's really, like, mailed in too many feuds.
No, not too many. No, not really at all.
Over the years, like, I guess it's starting to dawn on me. I'm like, why did he kind of get the bad worker kind of thing?
His 2006 was lackadaisical until Goldberg showed up, really. Because he also did that deal with Orton where they had a kind of average match before the blood stoppage finish.
Oh, so before he left was where he got the reputation.
Before who left?
Lesnar. Because you just said 06, didn't you?
No, 2016.
Oh, 16. Yeah, I guess he did kind of have a few bad matches in there.
Yeah, and then I think there was like a quasi face turn in there that didn't really go anywhere. And Yeah, I mean, and then the Goldberg thing got him back rejuvenated, and the first Universal title reign, had some really good stuff, and the second one did too. So no, I mean, Brock's output has been largely strong over the years. He probably does get a bad rap based on a few lackadaisical performances.
I mean, cause he's been back for a while now at this point. I always forget what that number is, but I always go, holy shit, hasn't it been like 6 or 7 years?
Yeah, it's been over 7, going on 8.
Yeah, I mean, when you're close to a decade back, it's been a while. If you have a couple of bad, if you have a bad stretch in there somewhere, I guess I can't blame you. Everyone has some bad stretches. Oh yeah. So I guess the next thing to me that got some TV time both on SmackDown and Raw. Sasha Banks and Bayley, again, getting plenty of their time on TV this week.
Yeah, they definitely did. They're definitely, continuing with that, strongly. Sasha and Bayley do, need to get back to, going on the offensive and kicking more ass, because they, pretty much got their asses kicked the 3 straight nights. Well, I mean, Sasha did, and then Bayley beat Charlotte by cheating and ran away at Clash of Champions. But then Raw, other than actually winning the non-title match over the Women's Tag Team Champions, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, then they came on the short end of the post-show brawl with Becky and Charlotte, and then it seemed like they were getting the better of Charlotte tonight until Carmella got involved. through NXT, Carmella and Bayley had a friendship that was probably more well documented on social media than anything that's ever been on television, including NXT.
Oh, okay. I was kind of wondering about that when I saw a couple of references on Twitter about them being a thing. Good friends. Because I'm like, did that ever... Because I feel like I started watching NXT right around the time that Bayley became champion. I feel like it was a little later down the line. I'm like, I don't remember her and Carmella, being good friends in NXT. But, the women didn't really interact that much on NXT. Especially since Carmella didn't really wrestle.
And then that was kind of my comment. I'm not sure if they realized they've never really featured Bayley and Carmella as friends on TV. In real life, that they've been very close, so it's something you can play up, and it gets Carmella back into the mix with in the women's division on SmackDown. And the way that they did it with having Carmella only attack Sasha, but never touch Bayley, and Bayley never did anything to Carmella either, because Charlotte booted her out of the ring. I mean, that part was well done. Because it makes sense that at least one of Bailey's old friends would be disappointed in her behavior and try to talk some sense back into her.
Oh. So they'll have to... I mean, they have time to explain it. And I'm all for, Carmella getting more in-ring time herself. I mean, she really seemed to be coming around when she got involved with the R-Truth gimmick. And it's been great, but they could use her in the women's division. I mean, they certainly seem to trust her more than some of the other young talent that they have at hand currently.
Yeah, they do. She's made the most of everything. She's someone who's made the most of everything, you know, they've given her, especially this run with R-Truth that's actually a year old. I saw sometime this week. they had their first time together on TV. It was about a year ago. So they've been able to stretch that out, you know, to a pretty good run.
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty impressive. I did kind of wonder. I didn't feel like I saw her on Raw on Monday. Oh no, she was there. I forgot. She was giving Glenn Jacobs the googly eyes, I thought. I was a little confused.
No, she was giving him the evil eyes because she knew he only wanted the 24/7 championship.
Oh, okay. I think she could have done some better evil eyes. I'm going to throw that out there then.
I'm not going to disagree if that's what you saw.
But a minor quibble. Carmella's been great. I mean, I really think having the four horsewomen all kind of going all at the same time has really helped the women's division. And, you know, Carmella's definitely someone that that can help out, you know, help build some depth and have some new matches. Like, I know that she's fought Charlotte, but if they kind of keep those two separated, then she still has a lot of available matches for her. And I would imagine that Sasha and Bayley are going to be on different brands just because.
Yeah, I could see it, but if you put Becky and Charlotte on one show and up on the same show, then moving Becky or moving Bayley or Sasha to say SmackDown 2, that really hurts Raw. You almost need both. Get you two horsewomen at least on one show to balance it out.
Oh. Yeah, I could see that being something of a standard. I guess that'll be the interesting thing to see. I mean, have they said that the wild card is ending when the Fox thing comes around?
Michael Cole, you know, said that very clearly last night.
Oh, hot damn! Well, I must have missed that for sure-sies. Of course, I was blowing through some stuff. So if it was when someone was coming to the ring, I
think it was during one of the announcer cutaways.
Oh, yep, bingo. Bingo. That is why I didn't watch. I kind of like the wild card idea, but it didn't really work the way they wanted it to.
No, it didn't. It just became a crush to rely on, and now they're going to have to do even more work to solidify a new, you know, brand split and, you know, distinctions between both shows. I mean, being on different networks will help, and not being on consecutive nights might also help as well. Although, it does look like they're still going to run with Survivor Series. It's Raw versus SmackDown, it's going to be really hard to sell brand unity with all this brand mingling and just, you know, everyone being, you know, new to their rosters.
Like a month into it.
Yeah, a month into it. But I, 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 But it does seem, it seems like they're married to that as the Survivor Series gimmick that separates Survivor Series.
Yeah, well, it's always seemed pretty stretched in my, you know, in recent years, just because
it's absolutely,
you know, people have never really gone with the brand loyalty kind of situation until, you know, those types of situations arose, which,
I mean, it's led to some good matches and some good stuff, but overall they've never really explained why any of the talent would really give a shit.
Yeah, and then when you have storylines where they get fired from one brand and just pop up on the next consistently, you know, it's kind of tough to take anything too seriously in that department. Oh, Kevin Owens got fired? I just kind of figured he'd pop up on Raw. He didn't. But, you know, this is the way of things.
Well, because Shane McMahon has authority over all of WWE.
Oh. Shane O'Mac.
Yep.
Anyway. How did we get to... Oh, we tangented off of that because of the four horsewomen being separated on their two shows moving forward.
Right.
Anything else to say about the horsewomen plus Carmella?
No. I mean, they made it official that the Sasha Becky match in Hell in a Cell will be inside Hell in a Cell, which I really look forward to. That should be a hell of a match. To build to that, they did the right thing by having a DQ and a brawl over the building at Clash of Champions. Was looking for Mr. Jeremy Mays as they were making their way up to the concourse, but I did not notice him, so I do not know if they were anywhere near the area where, if Jeremy was anywhere near the area where they were fighting.
He definitely was not the jackass that got caught trying to possibly touch Sasha Banks.
Oh, yeah.
In places.
Well, I would never think that.
So there is at least that the stunt granny brand does not try to pull off dumb shenanigans like that. But I guess the other thing with the ladies that I can think of off the top of my head, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross have made some kind of a weird good mix. And I guess I continue to be impressed by it, which, you know, it's even gotten Corey Graves turned off from being an Alexa Bliss lover.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, it looks like the swerve all along was that Alexa Bliss actually liked Nikki Cross, and they're gonna continue to run it as an actual team and be champions. Which is good. I mean, Alexa Bliss has been a heel her entire time on the main roster. So it's definitely change of pace for her. Nikki Cross is in incredibly likable, so no, it's good. Yeah, it's good stuff. I like it. Alexa Bliss is the woman outside of the horsewomen that is protected the most, and is certainly not a stretch to say an office favorite. So it always keeps her in. You know that they're always keeping her in the mix is important, and keeping her in the mix also keeps the women's tag team titles in the mix. So they're at least, you know, growing in importance, even though the champs lost a non-title match clean on Monday.
Yeah, I guess I just kind of accept that at this point is a crutch that is always needed to get a title shot for the newest team on the scene.
Right.
They
but Sasha and Bailey are entrenched in the singles titles, so I don't even know if we're gonna
get
a women's tag title match out of that. But Bailey and Sasha also lost the tag match to Becky and Charlotte the week before, so you know they needed the big win.
Oh. Yeah, they needed to bounce back. That's the only positive thing that that they've gotten to do this week. And then they've had their ass kicked.
Yeah. They absolutely have. So I would hope and expect them to come back strong next week.
Yeah, and there's still, what, we have another 3 weeks now until
2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Only two, and the last one will be, you know, Raw will be a normal show, but SmackDown will be, you know, the first episode on Fox will be something of an event unto itself, with the Brock match, and bringing all the legends in.
Oh. Yeah, I was half thinking, I'm like, oh my god, is that first episode of SmackDown going to be 3 hours long?
No. On Fox, you can't do that because of local news at 10 o'clock.
Oh. Thank goodness for old people news.
Well, I mean, there's been talk of having a third hour, but it ending up on FS1. I mean, but that there's been absolutely no announcement in that direction.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I could see that being a possibility and a way to go if you really wanted to add that third hour.
Either the third hour or they keep 205 Live. There's still been no official announcement about the future of 205 Live.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, that's one that I kind of feel bad about, that I didn't get around to watching it really pretty much ever. But what are you going to do? There's only so many wrestling watching hours that I have.
Yeah, there's been certainly some really good episodes and good matches and down, you know, in its run, but putting it live after SmackDown was just a terrible decision that they seemed to to remedy last year. You know, when they did the. What was it? What they did? They did the Mixed Match Challenge. When Mixed Match Challenge was on after SmackDown, they moved 205 Live tapings to, you know, the 7 o'clock hour, and then put the show on Wednesday nights after NXT, which created a nice 2 hour, if not 3 hour block. I believe that was also when NXT UK was starting up too.
Oh, right.
I thought that, or was it last year's Mae Young Classic as well? Something like that. You know, they had like a 3 hour block on Wednesday nights of these hour long shows. It was actually working out really well, and then they went back to 205 Live after SmackDown, and unless a really, really great match gets the crowd into it, it's a dead crowd that starts, you know, filing out after while the show's going on.
Yeah. Gotta feel bad for the talent in that situation.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I guess doing it before SmackDown makes the most sense. Production-wise, but yeah, I mean, I guess it is something. I don't know why I don't think about it more when I do go into the network, just because it is easy to pop over to other, because I just go to the live events, basically. Because I never watch what's actually airing on the network. Or at least I rarely do. You know, I guess pay-per-views are an exception in my book. But you know, their actual programming that has kind of regular hours, like it's not something that I concern myself with. Anything else from Raw that is worth talking about before
Well,
we get out of
the
here?
whole the main event storyline with the Fiend, Bray Wyatt, and Seth Rollins.
Yeah, I mean that is that definitely needs some coverage. Yeah, I
Yeah,
mean
it was what.
it's I guess it's kind of interesting. Like you said, like they've kind of booked this feud in advance. And I mean, it was another thing that happened at Clash of Champions. You know, when the Fiend attacked after Seth Rollins had beaten Braun Strowman.
That should have been a way more surprising moment. It definitely lost some luster because they've already had Bray talking about the going for the title in the previous couple of weeks on Raw. So that hurt it a little bit, but overall, I mean, once again, the imagery that they use with, you know, the care that they take with it. I'm actually interested in hearing what Jeremy has to say about how they do the Fiend entrance with the lights going out and the strobe lights and him popping up as a live television production. I'm interested in hearing about that. So make sure you ask him about that.
Gotcha. Will do.
Yeah, but no, I mean, for the way that they shot it with, you know, Bray behind Seth, and then the imagery of these somewhat iconic now in image of Bray standing over Seth while holding his hair before he delivered the mandible claw, you know, what was incredible, one of the better camera shots, and as well as the photographer who grabbed that shot as well, excellent production work there. And then moving on to Raw, the buildup was there all night of, the threat of the Fiend hanging overhead all night long. Multiple Firefly Funhouse segments. They did an absolute great job with that, with all that.
Yeah, it's funny that Bray Wyatt's a big deal because the WWE is making him a big deal.
Yeah, no. They have they are when they want to give someone a focus push and put a new paint job on them, they can absolutely, make it happen, and they should probably do that more often.
Yeah, I mean, and it's at least I've said it for a while now. Like maybe I didn't like those first 2 3 weeks of the Funhouse, but now that they've really turned it into something that he uses to even respond to people that are in the ring. I loved it on Monday when he was in the Funhouse and talking to Seth Rollins. You know, it definitely gives itself just a different vibe to be dealing with.
Yeah, it definitely does. It's very, early Undertaker, early Kane type stuff. That, you know what? As long as you've got the one guy who's doing it works. I mean, you can put yourself out of the moment or into the moment and not be thinking, how did he cut into the production feed and all those, like, how does he control the lights and all those questions? When it's really well done, you don't get all that kind of cynicism about it. So yeah, no, it's very, very good. They definitely have something here. It's a tough thing. It's a tough match because they've done so much work to get Seth back, on top, and then obviously they've got a lot invested in this Wyatt push. So to put them in the cell. In the main event of a pay-per-view, and sell, of course, meaning you pretty, yeah, there have been some exceptions, but you pretty much have to have someone lose in the middle of the ring.
Oh, right.
That element will be interesting. It's part of what makes it intriguing, the idea that, you know, dude, which one of these guys can even afford to lose right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the more interesting aspects of them jumping on this feud.
Yeah, I mean, but I was also, from the beginning on this, you gotta strike while the iron is hot, and, you know, with Bray Wyatt, and put him in the big matches really quick, and main event with him, you know, very quickly, you know, in case there is a shelf life on it and it does get stale. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, doing weeks of build up to this match, and then, you know, hopefully once that damn bell rings, you know, they put on a match fitting of the build up. But if they don't, and, you know, it feels like this the same old Bray Wyatt, well, at least they got the last 6 months out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it has been pretty interesting. Like, Bray, has he not had a formal match? Hold on.
Finn Balor at SummerSlam.
Oh.
He pretty much destroyed him.
Yeah,
and
but
sent,
that...
sent Finn back off to Ireland to get married.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much it, though, as far as in-ring action, right?
No, he still really hasn't wrestled. I don't pay that close of attention to house show results, so I have no idea if he's gotten any regular, you know, ring time like that. But no, you know, they've been very careful about it. Obviously only going to wrestle, you know, top guys. They're going to do a lot of the focus tricks. You know, it's definitely, I would compare it to, you know, the first year of The Undertaker. You know, in Undertaker's first year, you know, they pushed him right in the main events. He had his run with Warrior and then went after Hogan. I mean, and there was no guarantee that there was going to be any longevity to it. They, you know, they were going to get as much out of it as they could in the first year of it. And then it turned out the thing that it, obviously it had legs. A lot of legs.
Yeah, unbelievably long legs that may have gone through a couple of phases, but...
that have gone through multiple repairs and replacements, too.
yeah. God bless him. So, yeah, I mean, it is one of those things that's really weird. Like, I guess, you know, we both know how badly Wyatt was screwed up earlier. But
yeah,
we
made our bones. I may have made my early bones on Stunt Granny, ranting on how stale Bray Wyatt was getting. 5 years ago, I was.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it'll be interesting just because, you know, they gave him that championship run when it was too late.
Oh, absolutely.
And they had done too much damage to him.
Yeah, and then there was the stuff with Orton and burning the house down and, oh, the House of Horrors. Oh, my God. Let's move on from that.
yeah, but I mean, they literally are trying to move on from that.
Oh yeah, they're trying to you know, step all the way over that. No, it's a new character. It's you know they put a lot of effort into it. He's put a lot into it. He is completely committed to you know when he's in the funhouse, he is you know this. Smiley, happy, but obviously disturbed children's show host, and then when he's the fiend, he is the fiend. And it's, you know, he's been really awesome at it. He is definitely WWE's modern, character actor. It's just hopefully, the in-ring action lives up to the build up.
Yeah, we shall see, because it won't be because I don't think I ended up seeing the Finn Balor match, because was it a pre-show or was it early?
No, it was like, I think it was like, it ended up being like the second to last match on the show.
Oh. I thought I saw that pay-per-view, so I'm not quite sure why I'm thinking I didn't really see the match. But if it was that late, I definitely watched it. I have a tendency to miss maybe the 7 o'clock hour on these recent pay-per-views. Okay. Anyway, he'll have to have a real match with Seth Rollins. He's not going to destroy him. Like, even if he ends up winning the match, it is not going to be a dismantling of any sorts.
I don't think it will be, but I'm not entirely convinced that might not be the way that they go.
Okay.
But of course, Seth has already been dismantled and then had to fight his way back with in the Brock story. So yeah, no, that's what kind of part of, is that, this part of what makes this all interesting. It feels quick to go to this, but it also feels like the right thing to do too.
I guess the one last thing that we should probably hit before we get on out of here, to me would have to be King Corbin, baby. What do you think?
Yeah.
What says King you?
King Corbin, you know what? The being King of the Ring is a heel gimmick. It always has been. The times where they had a babyface win, it really didn't work, because you really can't have a babyface walking around in a cape and crown and not look foolish. Whereas with a heel, it can be part of the charm of the thing. Although, after what they did tonight, they may now have their excuse to not really play up that he's an actual king who wears a cape and crown anymore. We'll see with that. But no, Corbin has really stepped up his game this last month or so. I would argue that all three of his King of the Ring matches were strong. I think it might have actually been four. But anyway.
Yeah, I think it's just three.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was three. Yeah, all of his King of the Ring matches were pretty strong. He's coming into his own as a worker, and as a big man worker, and using his size, I'm really coming around on Baron Corbin. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
After the last 3 years or so.
Well, yeah, that was one of those things that I was coming to grips with it as I was writing the almost live, definitely half-assed review of WWE Raw, that I was just like, motherfucker, like, I have definitely not been a Baron Corbin fan. I do like his taste in music. God bless him for who his ex-girlfriend is, but, he's never seemed to be able to string it together. Like, every time I'm like, oh man, he had a really good match, it seemed like he followed it up with like three bombs directly after that. And yeah. It's just like, oh man, come on. Like, I thought that you were just kind of figuring this thing out. And, I kind of saw comments of the on Twitter when I hopped on. And, his truly badness really got him a lot of boos. And it's definitely given him a platform that other people, or I shouldn't say platform, definitely given him more chances than some people get, in my estimation. So, hey, he finally seems to be ready to run with this one. And if he is, I'm here for it. Like, the guy certainly has shown, as I already said, kind of flashes of being great. Well, maybe not being great, at least being good.
Yeah. Not going too crazy.
Yeah. Let's get a little overzealous there.
in some ways, Baron Corbin, he was a, you know what, let's pull up his entire career, and you know, and when he started to really make this point.
Okay. Because I feel like he was one of those guys. I mean, I feel like he's kind of been around for a while at this point, which is kind of interesting. Because wasn't he another one of those guys that did not spend a terribly large amount of time in NXT?
Oh, no, no. He,
or was he there a long time?
No, he was in NXT for almost 3 years.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was, I couldn't remember if it was a long time or not that long.
Right.
I knew it was one extreme or the other.
Well, he had his first match in October of 2012. He was only working NXT house shows, pretty much. They would have, when he started featuring them, well, let me look, I need to enjoy this. they began featuring him extensively on TV around 2014, when they actually started pushing him as a TV act, and then he debuted in the Andre Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania 32 in Dallas in 2016.
Oh, yep.
So he's at almost 7 years in the business, which, you know, and he was, you know, definitely a guy who was, you know, handpicked out, you know, after a football career to go right to the WWE developmental system. You know, no time in the indies. They basically made that his gimmick in NXT, that he was better than everyone else because of that. So, I mean, 7 years to pull it together. Maybe historically, that's not an especially long time. It's just that he spent so much of that time on TV.
Yeah.
We've seen the guy at his worst. You know, the audience has seen the guy at his worst, so you know it has an effect.
Yeah, it's definitely had a negative effect, and that's why I had a hard time coming to grips with the fact that he had strung together three straight good matches. And I did like his coronation this evening, too.
I liked it. I liked his arrogance. He's a heel's heel. He's an unrepentant asshole with no likable qualities or redeemable qualities. And he's big enough that him making short jokes about Chad Gable doesn't fall on deaf ears like some people who aren't that much taller than him.
Yeah, he's actually a large man. anything else to anything else to cover before I talk about beer?
No, go ahead, talk about the beer.
I had a drink by date for some beers that I picked up when I was in Pittsburgh this past time. My good friend Linda had told me about Roundabout Brewery. It is most fantastic. It is a very small tap room in the Lawrenceville portion of Pittsburgh. But it is worth going there. Their ginger wheat beer is one of my favorites. This one that I drank tonight was not the ginger wheat. That one I had a couple of last week or something. But this was the M59 IPA, 6.2% alcohol. Did not have an IBU listed, and I am not on Untappd at the current moment. So I'm not quite sure what that is. But all their beers, they have a little bit of a unique taste because, as I found out on my most recent trip, the wife of the head brewer is from New Zealand. So they happen to use a lot of hops that come out of New Zealand. And I do think that that gives them something of a unique flavor. So any of their stuff is pretty high quality. I haven't really gone wrong when I've gotten beers there. I went there for my second round bachelor party and had another couple of beers this time around. And they've all been of the at least good variety, if not very good. So if you're in the Pittsburgh area, I highly suggest hitting Roundabout Brewery. I'm not sure that their reach is that great. Yeah, if you're in Pittsburgh, do it. And that's it. I'm at DeFrang11. He's at Chris Calamita. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And, well, I'll see you tomorrow. Have a good night.
Later.